Welcome back to the Gaming News Canada show. I am your host, Steve McAllister. For today's podcast, we reconnected with one of the first people we met face-to-face in the American gambling industry way, way back in December 2021. Christopher Adams is the founder and chief executive officer of SharpRank, and he joins us from Baltimore, where Ravens fans are still smarting from the loss of the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. First of all, Chris, listen, my condolences, and we were talking off air about you actually being at the AFC Championship game on Sunday. So great that you're able to make it to the game. Not so great that the Ravens aren't going to the Super Bowl in a week's time.
Yeah, both of those events seem like lifetimes ago for me, 2021 and this past Sunday. So yeah, it was a fun environment. They do a very good job of game day experience for folks, and it was a blast. I mean, the outcome, it is the outcome that happened, but it was a lot of fun being there and being with the crowd and having a good time. So, we've known each other. Geez, we're kind of some of the older folks in this industry at this point, which is weird to think. I was thinking about it the other day, how 15, 20 years from now, looking back and thinking about this industry and what it was when we first showed up in 2020 versus what it'll be 20 years from now. And it's interesting to see the rapid evolution already, and it's just going to continue.
It's funny, Chris, like just a quick backstory on how you and I met. SharpRank and Parlay Media Group, we were both participants in the First Pitch competition at the SBC Summit North America in December 2021, but right kind of in the middle of COVID. That's probably one of the times, early days, where it was felt it was safe for people to go back to being in large crowds. And it's funny when you talk about us being industry veterans, one of the things that really stick out to me from that trip to New Jersey 3 years ago is Mark Silver had actually come down with a case of COVID, and I ended up going down there by myself to make this pitch. And not really knowing anybody in the industry, I knew Benji Cherniak, because Benji had come on board as an investor in the early going with our company. Eric Hurd, who I knew from my days at Yahoo Canada, was there through the post-game business, but really didn't know anybody else at all, and felt like a fish out of water. And again, I'll be, like you said, 15 years from now, when I'm, you know, sitting in a rocking chair on a porch up here where I live on Lake Huron, I've got fond memories of that day and SharpRank and Parlay Media Group sharing the first place prize. And I think you and I were sitting beside each other and kind of sitting up and shaking hands and introducing ourselves to each other. And it's amazing. It's like a fast moving train where that industry has come since our initial meeting back in 2021.
Yeah, it really is. And I will very quickly give a maybe never before heard story outside of the other person who was with me at that event. But when we both won and we stood up, we like shook hands. Immediately after that, somebody, and I'm not sure, I really don't know who it was, but they had a little microphone and they put it in my face and they said, like, congrats, how does it feel to win? And without even thinking, I just said, well, we didn't win, we tied. And and immediately I was like, whoops. Whoops. I don't know where that clip's going to end up. So, but yeah, I had very similar to you. I walked into that. That was, we were, you know, a few, half a year old, maybe a year old at that point. That was really my first introduction into the broader landscape of gaming. And I came in very similar to you. I had a background in a very different industry. So I walked in there not knowing anybody. And and thankfully what we found, and I think you probably can echo this, like there's a lot of really good people in this industry who want to see you succeed. They like innovation. They like trying new things and different approaches to things, and folks who are very supportive. And that was really encouraging for us as a company. And you know, I similarly am gonna always remember that day. That was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun for everybody, I think.
Yeah, I would say, you know, I would say I thought sharing the first place prize was one of the coolest feelings I've ever had. And I've been blessed in my career at working in sports media to do a lot of cool things. But I remember being in New York by myself and thinking, you know, I'm going to walk down the street and find a bar and have a beer and enjoy this moment. Texting my wife and kids to tell them that we'd won this competition and wanted, you know, a little bit of investment money, but it was just more people being excited about what we were doing in the industry. And it was just cool that day to, you know, for you to talk to me about what you guys were doing and excited about what the journey that we were headed on and vice versa. And I'm pretty sure that person holding the microphone was Robin McNeil, who was writing for playcanada.com at the time and now reports for bonus.com, because Robin interviewed me at the same time, and she was sitting either in the same row as us, Chris, or right behind us. But I'm almost 100% sure that was Robin who asked you that question.
Okay, well, hopefully that's been burned by this point and it doesn't resurface, because that will, and I, my family, wife and mom, dad, sisters will tell you that that's on par for me. I am about as competitive of a person as you can possibly find. So when I told them that, they're like, well, yeah, that, you know, at least you're consistent, you know.
And just to your point about good people too, we're recording this podcast less than a week before the ICE conference in London. We're not going to the conference this year, and you know, certainly won't miss the travel, you know, won't miss sitting at airports for several hours. But the one thing I really do enjoy when I go to these conferences, and again, I think that's one of the highlights of working in this industry for 3 years now, is just how many great people you meet. And I'm going to miss that, not bumping into those same people on conference floors for 2 or 3 days and having those conversations and catching up.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's because it's a good mix, and we've seen the evolution in the conferences, even just from that first one. And some of it did still have the lingering effects of COVID, as you mentioned, but seeing what it is today, I mean, it looks all of them look and feel like fintech conferences. I mean, they're massive. They're massive, and there's more and more integration of all the different stakeholders. Whereas I think initially when we first went, it was essentially like, okay, this is primarily media, sports book, you know, some of that type of stuff. But now you're starting to see the integration of regulators, legislators, folks from fintech and that type of tangential industry, crypto, like all the different spaces have kind of merged together to each kind of figure out where everything fits, right? And I think that's kind of where we are. I call it the compliance gate. It happens in every industry. So you boom up with growth, and then everybody takes a breath and goes, okay, let's take a step back. Let's figure out where all these pieces are, because there's a lot of really smart pieces all over the place. Let's figure out how they all fit together so we can move this industry forward in more of a growth into a maturity phase of the industry. That's still a long ways off, but we're right in the middle of everybody trying to sort the puzzle pieces and get them to match up.
That's such a perfect segue, Chris. We wanted to get you back here on the podcast because, as you mentioned, there is so much going on in the regulated gambling space across both the U.S. and Canada right now. We're in year 6 since the U.S. Supreme Court overturned the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act back in 2018. In April, Ontario will mark the 2-year anniversary of regulated sports betting and iGaming across the province. And as you know, some of these operators in Ontario are also making a push to get their products legally into other provinces across Canada as well. Let's just start with, again, some of our listeners might not know what SharpRank does, and maybe just give us kind of a state of the union on your company and what you're doing right now.
Sure. I'll give you the quick backstory as quick as I can. I've been told this needs to be way more concise by everyone. But my background's investment banking, very, very different industry. I was in investment banking. I was an auditor, came back to investment banking. And then in 2018, I left for business school, and 2018 marries up with the timeline you're talking about the repeal. And I heard a radio ad with a person claiming that he knew team doctors and could guarantee you the outcomes of games because he had inside information. And if you just called and bought these picks, you were guaranteed to win money. And I started cracking up because I would go to prison, right? I'm a licensed investment banker. I can't guarantee people money. I certainly can't do it based on inside information. And so I started thinking, okay, well, hang on. So if he's allowed to buy radio time, right, then there's clearly a gap in this integrity chain. And as I dug and we dug down into it, what we saw was a structural issue. And what I mean by that is it's something that the financial markets had to come to grips with in the early 2000s. At the end of the tech bubble, 2003, prior to 2003, the financial institutions of the world, your JP Morgan's, your Goldman's, had their equity trading, which is where stocks are bought and sold, commingled with their equity research, which is people telling you which stocks to buy and sell. No separation between those two functions. And what was happening was the people who bought and sold the stocks were approaching the researchers saying, we just took a big position on X, not Twitter, X stock. Give it a buy valuation and pump and or a buy recommendation and pump the valuation and we'll kick you back some money. And conversely, the researchers were approaching the people who bought and sold stocks and said, hey, we're about to issue a really bad report on a stock that our parent company is really exposed on, so trade out of it before we hit publish. And that ended really, really badly for obvious reasons. And the biggest one of which is erosion of investor confidence. That is a quantifiable metric. And the reason I bring that up is, aside from being a bit of a financial markets nerd, is the same structure exists now in sports betting, where you have a sports book, which is a trading floor. It is where bets are placed. Risk is off sold, commingled with content, which is, and news and information, which is your telling you what to bet on or telling you who's going to start or who's injured or who's getting traded. All of those are smashed together under the same roof. And if they're not under the same roof, they're associated in some way, shape, or form. So what SharpRank does is we serve as an independent evaluator at that mesh point. So wherever there is a sports book attached to content or news sources or whatever the case might be, we make sure there's no bad behavior or market manipulation or, you know, all the other bad things that can happen that can create erosion in consumer confidence, which has as detrimental of effects as deterioration of investor confidence.
Hey, Chris, I guess the other question too is just like there's so much out there when it comes to integrity and compliance. And with Gaming News Canada, obviously we cover companies like US Integrity and Odds on Compliance, which now have collaborated on the ProBet product. And Connectify is kind of a new player in that compliance piece. And in Canada, we have the Canadian Center for Ethics and Sports that does education of athletes and other sports stakeholders on the integrity piece. And we've covered the International Betting Integrity Association. Where does Sharp Rank fit into that, let's call it, ecosystem?
Yeah, it's a great question. And first and foremost, the U.S. integrity side of things, Matt, Halt, Scott, that whole team, I'm big fans of what they do. Their focus is primarily anything that can be manipulated on the field. That's primarily what it is. We focus on the same function, so anything that can be manipulated with respect to the public. And how they are ingesting content and marketing materials and so on and so forth. So very, very, very similar function, other side of the fence. And that's really kind of a good way to think about it from our standpoint. I think you bring up a good point in that there seems to be some fragmentation fatigue, I guess, because every province, every state has different sets of guidelines around what it means to be compliant within their state. And my theory and my thesis has always been that if the intent is there from a regulator standpoint and the private sector can solve it, that is the best case scenario for everyone, because it allows the private sector can move just as fast as the folks that are intended to be overseen. It can adjust and it can be more of a uniform layer of compliance across all these different jurisdictions. And that's really what I'm hoping this industry moves towards is, here is the private sector solutions that every state, every province is going to need. Now go out and find what you need within this list, and from there you're all set. That doesn't have too much of a bandwidth issue on provinces, regulators, states, but it also eases the compliance burden of the sports book and media property themselves. If rather than 39 different sets, it's one level of private sector companies, that's really beneficial to everybody.
Yeah, and that's certainly, I think, a frustration we've seen from several, if not all, stakeholders on both sides of the border, is that different in the U.S., different states have different rules. We've seen there's a real push now in U.S. states to have online gaming legalized and regulated, and that's obviously, that's a tough nut to crack, and it's one of the reasons when people point the Ontario marketplace, they kind of they give props to the Alcohol and Gaming Commission of Ontario, the provincial government, and also the industry for including iGaming in the marketplace when it opened. And I think that's an overwhelming reason why this has been such a highly competitive marketplace in Ontario with almost 50 operators, because they do offer that mix of iGaming and sports betting.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, so I can't speak highly enough about the Ontario, the AGCO and the other groups and how they handle that. There's a few states who operate very similarly, which to me, the way to go about that, and where I at least see the most success in Ontario or New Jersey or Pennsylvania, or you know, wherever the case might be, is in West Virginia, Maryland, etc. The conversation with all the stakeholders happens beforehand, and there is a collective solution that is understood that, look, we might need to tweak this, but as of today, we all agree that this is what we're going to do. And then it gets implemented in. I think that's really something that certain jurisdictions do very, very well with respect to implementing new regulations and things like that. iGaming's a totally different animal, and a total different Pandora's box of concerns, problems, positives, everything, just everything. And so I think the difference in the rapid adoption of sports betting versus the rapid adoption of iGaming, at least here in the US, has been, we're still sitting in that compliance gate with sports betting, where folks are saying, look, we still don't even have this right. We still need to adjust this before we get to that. And that's kind of what I can tell is the conversation topic of the day in a lot of places.
A word from our sponsor.
Hey there, sports fans. Are you looking for fresh and fun takes on the hottest topics in Canadian sports? Well, we've got just what you need. Introducing Homestand Sports Today, your go-to daily sports newsletter, bringing you the Canadian angle on the hottest NHL, NBA, footy stories, and more right to your inbox. But wait, there's more. Homestand Sports isn't just another text-heavy newsletter. Every story has its own video featuring our talented hosts like me, Albert Vartanian, giving you a newsletter experience like never before. And did I mention it's a free subscription? Subscribe now at homestand.ca.
Now back to the show.
I don't expect you to give away company secrets here, but when we spoke three weeks ago, I guess, for the newsletter, we talked a bit about SharpRank's efforts in Ontario. And I just wonder if how much you can tell our listeners about the work that SharpRank, or the conversations that SharpRank has had up here in Canada, and where you think there's a role for the company to play here.
Yeah, I think we are. So we have had a few conversations with AGCO and OLC and the like, and you know, I think someone like Paul Burns does a great job of making sure everyone's voice is being heard. I think he's very good at that and very smart. I think generally speaking, there are a lot of very, very smart people in those different pods. And so our conversations have been, you know, what we do is a little unique. And a lot of what we're doing is educating on upcoming risks, upcoming compliance issues and things like that. But I think when it boils down to it, the intent of what is getting put forward in Ontario around advertising regulations, it still ties back to what SharpRank does. And what I mean by that is there are two different types of advertising, as you're probably way more informed on this than I am, but there are two types of advertising. There's advertising when you know you are being advertised to. That would be a billboard, a TV ad, a radio ad, whatever. There is also advertising when you do not realize you are being advertised to. And this phantom side over here has largely gone without any sort of guardrails or any sort of best practices around it. So inevitably what's happening is certain frameworks are being put around the static side of advertising. So, hey, don't use guarantee. Don't use celebrities or those who can those who market to minors or you know, you name it, anything. And those are all very, very good things to have. The problem, and this ties back to the solution of the private sector, the problem is the folks who are affected by that type of regulation can very quickly squeeze the balloon of resources into an unchecked area, which would be your content, the things that you don't necessarily think of as advertising, but are probably way, way, way more impactful. And so that's part of the conversation that we try and have, not just with Ontario, but everyone, right? And just say, look, that the intent is correct, but it needs broader scope, right? It needs broader scope and the ability for a private sector to solve it Because if every province and state comes up with their own set of advertising guidelines, I mean, I've talked to certain operators who say that the amount of time they have to spend checking advertising is, it's not sustainable. They're trying to figure out ways to have the banners on certain headers of websites be cubes. So depending on which state you're in, it'll hit the correct you know, guidelines and things like that. It's very difficult. It's very difficult. It's a tough problem for anyone to grapple with. That's sportsbook, media, regulator, us. It's difficult. It's very, very difficult, because what we don't want, and what our company has never been a fan of, is just being adversarial to these companies, these sportsbooks and media properties. That is in no way, shape, or form. And I don't think the regulators are either. It's just, it takes creative thought and creative solutions. And we pulled a lot of our solutions from financial markets who already had to solve the problem, and we just repurposed it for this. It's going to take outside of the box thinking. It's going to take some innovation, and then it's also going to take somebody to step up and make a stand and be proactive about it, because the alternative is not good either. You know, not adopting best practices and getting ahead of problems, it just doesn't work.
The content conversation is a fascinating one. It's also, as you mentioned, it's complicated, because you have journalists, and I think you were on a panel, Chris, a few weeks ago, and I'll get you to talk about that in a second. But, you know, you have different buckets of content. You have journalists, beat writers who cover teams every day, and they're posting information on social media, whether it's an NHL beat writer who drops a tweet about an injury, or that the backup goaltender is going to play in a game tonight. People breaking news on trades, for example, or a player being put on waivers, or joining a player assistance program. You have then your broadcasters who aren't journalists, but who do provide information, and more often than not these days, they're former athletes who have access to players and agents and coaches and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then you have social media, where you have people who have tens of thousands of followers, and who, again, someone mentioned to me today, it's funny, I was on a LinkedIn thread with somebody, and they were talking about Rob Gronkowski having more social media followers now than he did when he was a tight end in the National Football League. So, you know, how do you separate that? You know, do you separate those buckets? And again, I, as someone who spent a good chunk of my life in journalism, I get a little high and mighty, I guess, when there's a suggestion that journalists are going to be involved in shady activity. I mean, I'm not naive enough to think that there's not going to be the odd reporter out there. That happens in every walk in life. But I think as a rule, journalists are doing their jobs, and they're not producing the information they produce with any nefarious intent. But I'd love to get your thoughts on all that. And again, I apologize. That's a bit of a long-winded statement/question.
No, it's the crux of the problem, right? Because we are of a similar mindset as you, which is generally speaking, people put their seatbelts on, right? Generally speaking, people eat somewhat healthy, but without setting certain standards and requirements, there's no way to define the population. It's kind of like a photo negative. I just dated myself big time there. The photo negative used to be, for younger listeners, you would develop the photo negative into the actual photo, and it was the exact opposite. But that's exactly the point, is without without those standards and without setting a speed limit, it becomes really tough to tell and then also take action for those bad actors. Because our belief, like we said, is very similar to yours. People have a high level of integrity, especially if they've been in journalism for a very long time. That is like rule one from what I can gather. You know, it's not always the case, but generally speaking, that is. And the goal of someone like us and what we're presenting is to be at least set some standards and some guardrails so that if and when there are bad actors, they can be weeded out very quickly. And to your earlier question about defining those populations, yeah, there is a big difference. There is a very big difference between a journalist who gets to vote on certain MVP races, as there is a social media influencer who tells you who to bet on. Those are very different problems to solve. That I think we've done a good job of kind of bucketing people and saying, okay, here are the different problems associated with all these different groups of people. And as far as news reporting goes, you know, this you nailed it. This is the challenge, right? It's when you are just reporting the news, that is, you know, as most people and I believe, that is for the public good. That is to inform the public of whatever it is, an injury, a trade, a backup goalie, whatever the case might be. Where it gets blurry is when that person is financially incentivized by a sports book, because that type of information affects betting odds. And so now the consumer has to sit there and go, that backup goalie didn't start. And I took that information and whatever the case might be. Right. And so it's definitely a challenge. It's definitely gray. And what our main objective is simply to unblur those lines. It's not saying like you can't use journalists, you can't have social media influencers, you can't do this, you can't do that. But what we are saying is if you're using them to manipulate a market, a betting market, someone needs to know that. Right? somebody needs to be making a phone call, whether that's internal to the compliance team or to the regulator themselves or whatever the case might be. It's a challenge. It's a big, big challenge. And, you know, I think one of the things that I just kind of alluded to a little bit, but there is this notion of like, buyer beware, right? And that's a very real thing. What we would say to that is, that works once the guardrails are in place, but there are no guardrails right now. And that's the problem is, if I choose to eat unhealthy, I choose to go into a restaurant that doesn't have a health inspector grade on the window. I choose to, not wear a seatbelt. I choose to buy a very, very risky stock. All those guardrails and all those regulations and oversight into those industries are right there on the side of the can meal. You know, they come with the manufacturer, with the car, and prospectus for the stock or whatever the case might be. Those are all in place. At that point, it is buyer beware. That is my decision to act in that manner, but I've been informed of the risks associated with it. There isn't anything here yet. There isn't anything. There isn't even a disclosure requirement if you do have a partnership with a sports book. Something that simple. It's extremely challenging. It's what keeps me up at night is solving that problem, that exact problem.
Yeah, I will say, Chris, like I think it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to have a policy for journalists, because I can't believe it, but I have seen there are sports writers who who plug odds for sports books at night on Twitter. And that makes no sense to me. And I think at the very least, maybe, and you shouldn't have to spell this out, but I guess you do, is that if you're a beat writer, you shouldn't be betting on the sport that you cover. And that has been policy at newspapers in the past, quite popular back in the days when horse racing was bigger in the US and Canada, where you had full-time horse racing writers, where there were papers that had a policy where horse racing writers couldn't bet on the races. And I think that would be, having a policy like that in place makes sense. And it's interesting, I reached out to Sportsnet and TSN several times by email the last couple of weeks, trying to do this story for the newsletter, just to see if they had a policy on sports betting for their talent, and haven't received a reply to those email requests. So, which I seems quite telling.
Yeah, it's interesting. Everybody's going to take a different approach, right? Like, you had ESPN and Penn come out publicly with like, hey, here's how we're handling content and sportsbook, and here are the policies in which we follow, and so on and so forth. And then you have other folks who just say like, look, till you tell us to do something, we're not moving. Like, we have too many other requirements in too many other jurisdictions to add anything. And that, you know, there's, you can't say that's wrong, because there's like, the thing with the story of the NBA draft and the FanDuel Athletic writer who puts out a tweet and goes on a press run about the Hornets pick, that whole story, it was interesting. The following day after this public outcry, you had a statement from the company coming out publicly and talking about all these sorts of things and guidelines and things like that. And I think everyone was kind of taken back by the fact that like, it got to that point before certain things needed to be put out. We're just seeing a different news story about this every week. This merging of these two things with respect to content and trading, it's kind of at a fever pitch right now. And I think that's why it's become so front and center for regulators and legislators in all these different states and provinces.
Yeah, and I think as we're seeing in Ontario, I think it becomes an even bigger issue, the fact that sports betting has become so commonplace and broadcast, and there are betting segments. And I know the sports in particular, with their Hockey Night in Canada coverage, really struggled that first year and took a lot of criticism. And if you talk to a lot of people around the industry here, there's a belief that mishandling of advertising and media content really drove this backlash against advertising and led the AGCO to go down the road of putting new standards in place to restrict the use of celebrities and athletes, because they were catching a lot of heat from the public.
Yeah, I think so, and that's normally what it takes for policy change, right? It's you can have as good of an idea as you want, but until the public starts shining a light on it and crying foul, it tends to be just a good idea. So yeah, it's you know, like everything, we'll see, right? It's one of those things where I am a big believer in innovation for efficiency and stabilization, because I think there are so many amazing opportunities for this industry at that merge point, at that exact merge point of content and trading, that we haven't even started to think about yet. And part of the reason is, people are still unsure what the guidelines are going to be around that. But, you know, a year from now, 2 years from now, with some like stabilizing regulation and in place, I think there's going to be just amazing advances in that, like, we're already kind of seeing the first last year in the Super Bowl, your point of Rob Gronkowski, like that live football kick. Is that really innovation? I don't know, but like it's trying something different. And I think we will be able to take more shots downfield once that structure is stabilized to be more firm and to support growth and innovation on top of it.
Yeah, and I think, Chris, as there's more pressure on operators to achieve profitability, there is going to have to be a pulling back of marketing and advertising spending at some point. And that, to your point, that's going to force these sports books to be a lot more creative when it comes to customer acquisition and thinking beyond just throwing a bunch of money at television advertising.
Yep. Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, that's something that I like I said, I'm a bit of a financial market nerd. I read the 10-Ks and listens to earnings calls. And it's a really good point. I mean, it's where does that pullback come from? Because it can't come from compliance. It can't come from operations. It can't come from a lot of places. But it can come from certain places. And so, but that ties right back to what we were talking about with squeezing the balloon of resources and taking all those really, really smart minds and putting them into, okay, here are your guardrails for content and how you can handle content. Go nuts. And I think you'll see some really interesting products and innovation out of that. And, you know, we're very hopeful that is what happens. It's an interesting road. It's, you know, just to tie back to the start of our conversation, it's in 4 years' time, the landscape has just changed so dramatically, so fast. And it's interesting. I mean, it's a new challenge every day.
Hey, Chris, before we let you go, just what is SharpRank's focus for 2024? Like, where are you and your people spending most of your time right now?
Yeah, a lot of what we do is on the legislative and regulatory sides. I think that a year ago, if you asked me that, I would say we're heavily focused on commercial agreements. The overarching response we got was, this is great, the industry needs this. We have way too many requirements in way too many jurisdictions to do optional things. And so we shifted our focus into educating, and you know, we still work with commercial partners, and we think we'll have a decent year on that side, but a heavy focus of what we do has been, and where we've seen the most appetite, has been from legislators and regulators who want somebody to give them some answers here and give them some information that they may or may not have the bandwidth for. And that's something we do really well.
Christopher Adams is the founder and CEO of SharpRank. This is great. Really enjoyed the conversation, Chris, and great to catch up again. Listen, wishing you and everybody at SharpRank a really successful 2024, and hopefully we'll meet again at the SBC Summit North America, I think in May in Secaucus.
I'm sure we'll see each other out on the road and in some capacity, whether it's there or up north or. Maybe I can steal you down here for a game at Camden Yards when the Jays are in town. Anyway, yeah, Steve, it's always great chatting with you. I'm very appreciative we got to meet in that competition and have stayed in touch. So
yeah, me too, Chris. That's it for this edition of the Gaming News Canada Show podcast. You can find us at gamingnewscanada.ca. This podcast appears on the various platforms, Spotify, Apple, et cetera. Thanks so much, everyone, for listening as always, and we'll look forward to seeing you again in a week's time.
Thank you for listening to the Gaming News Canada show. Sign up for our newsletter at gamingnewscanada.ca.
Follow Steve McAllister on LinkedIn. Message Steve if you're interested in being a sponsor or featured guest.